welcome to another episode of Three Wise DMs, the podcast where three dungeon masters have been doing this for way too long. Talk about all the things we do to try to make our games as good as they can be.
Hi, I'm Tony.
I'm Chris.
Try to understand. I'm a magic man. But yes, welcome back everyone to another episode of Three Wise DMs. This is the Rock and Roll DM, DM Dave. I completely transcribe that down because I cannot hit what Ann Wilson does in Heart. That's obviously Heart, Magic Man, killer song, killer band. I often feel like Heart gets overlooked and or underrated. So just going to throw that out there. I like to create controversy. Yeah, I'm trying to hot take everyone. Heart's cool.
I would have lost money if you were a fan, Dave. That surprises
me. Especially like the real like mid-80s glam era stuff. Like I thought they were really hitting it hard, dude. Like hard. Their early 70s stuff I dig, Barracuda, Magic Man stuff, but like they just hit a really like anyway. That's a whole thing. Anyway, everyone, welcome back. You are here to listen to us talk about D&D, not about killer female fronted bands from the 80s, which we could do an episode on that.
I was more of a Paul Abdul man myself, but
sure. Obsolete track. Lita. Oh, Kiss Me Deadly, dude. Joan Jett and the Blackheart. Come on. I mean, just stop already. But anyway, so you guys have been hopefully following us along. If you haven't and you're jumping in on this episode, I seriously urge you to go back into our real-time world-building experiment as we have built out our custom campaign, crowdsourced with our listening audience and also random people on social media, called Boomtown, our Weird West sci-fi meets D&D world where technology has returned magic to the world. So what we've done last three episodes is build out like our four main classes. So we had the gunslinger with Roland. We had our rogue or bandit. We're still workshopping some names, but that was John Maverick East. And last episode, we introduced the prophet class, which is our idea of the cleric, but much more prophetic, much more preacher from the in the Western type of setting. And that was Sister Mercy Kane, which is killer. She was the first one that I think Chris ever rolled out a natural 18 on 46 drop the lowest. Amazing. So, yeah, I think he's still
listen
reeling
just for
from
that.
It,
it's a momentous occasion, right? Like it's
if you think it can't happen, everyone, keep hope alive. Keep hope alive. But we are now, so like we talked about, we're building out the four main classes that originally populated D&D, your fighter, thief, cleric, and wizard. So today we are going into the magic man, the wizard class. What does this look like in Boomtown? It is probably the most different that we have seen so far because of how hard we've been leaning into technology. Now, I want to throw it out to you guys, but Tony, I came up with something and I just want to start it off. I know this is usually your thing, but I'm just going to start it off. So we had the Maverick, right? John Maverick East, right? Mm-hmm. I'm thinking whatever the wizard's name is, they are known as the Blackstone. And the Blackstone is also what we'll get into. Maybe
are we gonna get sued?
Maybe the artifact that is like their arcane focus, the Blackstone, from which powers their spells. I'm throwing it out there, and now I'm going to shut up, and I'm going to let you guys do your thing.
There was a magician named Blackstone.
That I know.
Day, ironically, and he was cool.
I know. I was thinking Harry for a second, just because of Houdini, because he was kind of from the
you could
the Western times in a way, a little afterwards, but yeah.
And I do have a name. Just gonna throw it out there. When I came back with was Solomon Walker.
I really like it, Solomon Walker, the Blackstone,
aka Blackstone. There you go.
That's really damn good.
The Blackstone, yes. Solomon Walker. All right. I mean,
I see him with a cane with, like, you know, something onyx top.
Solomon Walker. I enjoy it. I also like because he's like a walker, you know, I mean, he's just walking, right? He's out there on the hard pan.
Texas right. Walker. I mean, like, it's very gritty.
Walker, Texas. Yes, this is my wizard, Texas Ranger.
Here's a roundhouse kick you.
All right, so let's start it off as we do, just kind of like as we've been doing, guys. We're kind of basing this, we're flowing with the 5e original PHB just as a reference guide, and that's getting us started. So let's start level one with Solomon.
I would say, what are we going to call it? Like, what is we have a name for it. I have some names here.
Like for the class.
Yeah,
okay. I didn't know if that was just going to organically manifest, but yeah, well, some stuff. Let's hear it.
It was at the top of my notes here. So I had two of them. One was Wanderer, right? Because I was trying to think what these guys would be, and you're generally an outcast in this society or something if you're taking this class. Like, you're kind of accepting that. And then the other one was, we often talk about how it's technology, so if we're going to kind of be combining wizard and artificer a little bit, engineer, I'm just pronouncing it like Michael Caine, but it's, you know, engineers were a thing back then, right? They would be working with steam like that, which would be magical, right? And for the theme of our world, I thought those two would be very much in the style of a Wild West sort of steampunk sci-fi.
I am all about, I don't know about you, Tony, I am all about the engineer. I love it because it puts it right there in front of you, like, this is a tech-based class, you know, even though it's spell wielding.
Okay, all right, let's roll with it.
I had ideas.
They were like second tier ideas. Like, I could say, like, he's the spell smith. I mean, you know, like something that basically works out to the same thing. So
he's Solomon Walker, the Blackstone engineer.
Engineer one. All right, well, I'm just glad I got at least one not dude in the party, like, so it wasn't just sausage party the D&D campaign, like, so, you know, at least Sister Mercy Kane is rolling a little bit. All right, so Tony, I know you're usually talking about, like, the hit dice in the beginning. What do we think about this D6? Like, is that just, like, punishing for, like, no reason at this point? Because, like, wizards will be they will be corralled in a way in this world, right, with the level of spelling.
So what's interesting here is I had originally said, like, because of their spellcasting options, we wanted to stay away from giving them unarmored defense. I'm kind of backing off that now. I feel like all classes should have this, because nobody's really wearing armor. Are you going to have upgrade options in AC? Obviously. But generally speaking, it's not going to happen. So what I kind of came back with, and I'm jumping ahead, so forgive me, to make all of this work. So you'd say they're using intelligence and dex. Let's just throw that together. That makes up their armor class. Like, say this person's got like a 16 and a 15, and Chris is going to roll this person up. It's another hypothetical. So this person's got an opening 15 armor class. And that's not so shabby. But you don't want to stack that with mage armor. That's where my head immediately went. So what I propose is mage armor proposes a minor degree of damage resistance, like, say, -3 off of any given attack versus boosting their AC.
We definitely could go that route if we wanted to just kind of rewrite that spell in particular. And that depends on, like, if, you know, if we just start rewriting spells across the board. For me, like I was saying last episode too, I love the idea of unarmored defense across the board, because heavy duty firepower in this world, like just mechanical firepower, is going to blow out any first level spells you're dropping out, second level spells, cantrips. Like, these are damage dealers if you're pulling a revolver, a shotgun, a rifle, right? So, like, I'm not too worried about that, but I would say, like, for the mage armor, like, it's an either or situation, right? Like, if you have unarmored defense, you can utilize that, and you're using your dexterity and your stuff. But if you are deciding to put on armor, like we talked, there is some type of armoring in this world in a sense of, like, really heavy duty dusters or magic armor, then you choose, you then decide, am I taking unarmored defense or am I taking some level of magical or something armor? I think that's an easier workaround. I like the idea, Tony, but I think just in terms of, like, familiarity. Thoughts?
I think as long as you consider mage armor to be putting on armor of sorts, and then you just adjudicate it that way. When I put mage armor on, I'm no longer protected by my unarmored defense, because that in itself is a bit of a, you know what I'm saying? I'm putting on mage armor.
You have put on plate armor. Yeah.
It's magical plate armor, so I'm no longer protected by that. Either that, or you kind of just take mage armor out and you put more emphasis on something like shield, which is going to be much more effective along with the unarmored defense, where you're going to be able to, that would stack with the unarmored defense, where you're going to be able to protect yourself against getting shotgunned into oblivion.
An additional point, Tony, and then I want to hear your thoughts on everything that we just said. The idea, like, so when we look at most spell lists, right? And people are like, why am I taking this spell? It's because it doesn't necessarily come into the campaign. Like, not all spells work in every campaign, right?
Fair.
So I think mage armor could fall into this way too. Well, like, well, I get my unarmored defense is better, so why am I going to bother? I can have it, but why do I bother? You know, so it just lessens the prioritization of that spell.
It could, but this circles back to when you said, hey, how do you feel about these 6 hit points? Well, if the mage had some damage reduction.
Right, right.
Right? It doesn't have to be against everything. This could be against physical attacks. I believe there is a feat for plate mail, for a heavy armor specialization, basically, that gives you, like, non-magical damage reduction. And It that's kind of where I drew the inspiration. It is a thought. You could just say, hey, you've got your intelligence, your dex, and you've already got your armor. But I really wasn't looking to rework all the spells. However, I did want to, because that's just such a deep rabbit hole, right?
There's no reason, unless we're going to recreate an entire role-playing game ourselves. And like, why? No, that's not really what we're going. We're flavoring. This is, in essence, a 5e campaign setting. You could translate it to other systems, sure, but we're basing this as, like, this would be a cool campaign to play in 5e.
No, and giving a spell that gives you, like, a -3 damage reduction for 8 hours is, like, you're going to, and especially at lower levels, you're just going to avoid a lot of damage. Anything under a 3 that you're getting is just a thing there. Like, they have to remain a little squishy for the area of effect spells and the damage they're going to do later. I think that's, you know, why it's been sort of low. But the mage armor part is interesting, because it doesn't really, if your intelligence and dex are good enough, if that's what you're basing it on, there really is no point to cast mage armor on yourself. You're already armored more than you would be if you cast that. So
exactly. Same reason barbarians and monks generally aren't worried about what armor they can find, because they're getting a much better benefit from their unarmored defense in traditional play, right?
Okay, we will deprioritize that spell. It could still be floating around for someone with some rougher stats, but...
Because right, you never know how it might work out. It could actually work better in different situations. But
depending on how I roll this, Solomon may need
the armor.
But now, so like, in essence, like the whole D6 wizard thing and the no armor on wizards and stuff, like that's very much one of those things that for me is a holdover from early editions, right? Where wizards started very, very squishy, but then they began a quadratic equation of, like, exponential power growth. Their power curve went steeply up all of a sudden. That's not really the same with the way it currently is, though. Do you guys kind of agree with that? Like, the wizard is balanced for the most part with the other classes, so why still drop them with this D6? Thoughts?
That's an interesting, even outside of our campaign philosophical debate. For someone who's played Wizard extensively, you really do get the raw deal as a spellcaster until level 5. Like, that's right. Really, like, you're waiting.
Right.
At 5, you pass the bar. Then you're a practicing lawyer. You can start
making But you're not, like, the thing is like, level 5 in, like, early editions of a fifth level wizard, you can become very powerful with reality warping power quickly. And that kind of balanced that off. But now, like, fireball.
But that's, it's the area of effect. A rogue can't sneak attack an entire room of orcs and fry them all to a crisp. A fifth level wizard, they open the door, he's like, fireball, boom.
Right, but a cleric can as well.
And but yeah, once they reach saying, that kind know? Of level there, but it's they're somewhat limited. I think the Wizards have more of a things there, and I think it's reflective of the idea that they were supposed to be people that were bookworms, yeah, right? Like then, I think it's that, but it's I appreciate the point. They are squishy at low levels.
We're staying we'll stay with the D6 for right now. This is you know, when we start playing this out, we'll see if how much of any of this has to change. But so okay, we'll start with D6 hit points. Obviously, armoring. Like we talked about, the armoring isn't as much of a situation in this world, but all the classes will have this level of unarmored defense where you're taking your like one of your base class skills and then like dex or something, correct? Like this, yeah. What we were talking about, right? Just to create a level of armor class so that you're not just blown away the first time you get you know, into a scuffle. All right, so like we talked about last time too. Tony had the great idea of the saving throws, where you get your saving throw as the class, right? So this one would obviously be intelligence as a proficiency, but then the idea to customize your character. So if we wanted to customize Solomon Walker, the Blackstone, what other saving throw is he really good at? Like, what's his story?
I'm feeling Dex.
Either Dex or Constitution for me.
You want him to dodge or withstand the lead poisoning? Yes.
Basically, yes.
Yeah. To make a Constitution tougher. Check against lead poisoning.
Because intelligence is going to come up every couple of circuses of mind flayers when they attack.
Yeah. All right. Well, I mean, I'm agnostic on this. What do you guys want? You want Dex or you want Con? Just throw one out. Dex, done.
Okay.
He's wiry. He's like,
yeah.
All right, Chris, get yourself ready. Let's see if Solomon Walker can do what Sister Mercy Kane did, or if he just rolls all fucking nines or something.
We'll see,
I don't know.
We're about to see if he needs mage armor or not.
All right, so let's start him out.
Well, this isn't bad. That's 11, 15 to start. That's not
too
bad.
There you go.
Right. Oh, that's another 15. Wow, right. He's actually running hot.
And this
wow,
is about where it goes off the cliff.
Dice are on a good roll. Dice are on a good roll here. That's not bad. That's 12.
All right. He's all way above average so far.
11.
There you go.
That's 14. I'm missing it. That's a 14.
That's quite better than 11.
Yeah, it is.
I'll take that 14. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm rolling pretty hot here. So that's 11, 13.
Oh, my God. And one more. He's a super balanced.
Yeah, these dice are rolling hot these days. Let's see. All right. This one, 6, 3, and 1, 10. 10.
A 10.
All right. He's a keeper. Wow.
Yeah. No, he's above average pretty much across the board. So, like we've been doing, we're either doing raise 1 by 2, 1 by 1, or raise 3 by 1. So, what are we thinking? I mean, we could do a 15, we could do 16, 16, 15. We could do 16, 16, 14.
16, 16, 14.
That's right? Because that gives us a lot of balances. A lot of bonuses, that is. All right. I mean, obviously, this is an intelligence-based character because, again, this is kind of the wizard in our world. And we can get deeper into this maybe later down the road. But, like, I think we're probably going to bring in some ideas from the Artificer class as well in terms of creation and building and stuff like that. But for right now, we're going to just keep it in the wizard world with the idea that the flavor is mechanical in a way or, you know, technologically based. So I mean, obviously a 16, one of the 16s in intelligence.
Indeed.
We're not stupid. Come on. All right. Mm-hmm. We got a 16, 12, two 14s and a 10. Start throwing them out.
Dex, and I'd put the 14 in Con, and the rest we could debate.
Okay, so we still have a 14, a 12, and a 10. None of these are bad. What is Solomon's 14 in Wisdom?
I would think so.
He's a little more. Well, you know, I like that idea in the sense that, like, the engineer, like, you have been out in the waste because this is where you're gaining your probably an arcane focus of some level of a tech based thing, and you're learning how it's working. But that's not just intelligence based, it's also a sense of the energies that are coming through it, right? And then 12 in charisma, I was just gonna say, because I find that to be helpful, and we have plenty of strength our initial starting party of pregens here. All right, so that's a plus zero, that's a two, plus three, a plus two in con, a plus three in intelligence, a plus two in wisdom, and a plus one in charisma. Very nice. Obviously, we're going with the plus two proficiency, so we got zero. We got a five in dex. We got a two in con. Intelligence bonus is also a five on the saving throw, and a two and a one. Perfection. All right. Skill-based here, as we've been doing. These are in the wizard class, you have two, right? From Arcana, History, Insight, Investigation, Medicine, and Religion. Now, as we have done now, this is now three that have shifted just because of the nature of the world. So Arcana is now a tech skill, which obviously they're going to take that in some fashion because that is literally what it's going to be based off of. History, we have turned to Tony's idea of streetwise, which is more the I know a guy, I know about the towns, I know about some of the wastes and outposts, as opposed to I know of the First Age, because currently that kind of information isn't really available in Boomtown. Insight, investigation, medicine, and then religion, we started talking about last time, that kind of fell a lot more into the prophet class, but the idea of preach. You know, this idea of gathering followers. I was even getting the idea of maybe as you gather followers, you gain power or lose power. You know, kind of like in Dragonlance with like the moons. As they wax and wane, your power increases and decreases. That's a possibility. Who knows? But out of these, I mean, I'm looking at obviously tech and then probably streetwise.
I mean, that would be where I'm leaning.
Okay. And then maybe investigation.
And investigation. Yeah, why not? Because he's intelligence. And then maybe insight, too, because he does have that wisdom.
Okay. No, and he'd have to be able to read people.
Right. A spellcaster. He's getting a sense of this. And also, like we've talked about, too, like if Solomon Walker has grabbed this piece of tech that he's starting to play with, and he's starting to learn that it does really crazy, powerful stuff. As we talked about with like the idea of sorcerers and druids and warlocks, like over time, the energies of this thing are also warping him. So I think that plays into this wisdom thing, like his intuitive abilities might start to shift and change too, you know, but that's something that you could like build into as opposed to he's been warped. He is warping, right? Maybe something like that.
So, like, one of the classic flaws I see in a lot of these things is where, like, you see, like, a character class or a path you could take, and, like, you're like, oh, I'd want to try that, and you look at it, and like, wow, that, like, it's really, like, crazy. Like, you get warped or, you know, disjointed, and, like, you want to have, like, a really messed up character by level 10. Like, no thanks. It strikes some kind of, maybe you could use that into creativity warping, maybe.
Of some form. No, I'm not. And for me, I don't feel like it's not like the hills have eyes. It can be. I mean, there's definitely things where radiation and stuff can create like really monstrous things and different appendages.
But for me,
the warping, because again, like I go back to the idea of like the old world of this planet, right? And where this tech came from and our idea of like divinity and things like that is possibly that it's like it's changing people inside. It's changing like them. It's perfecting them in some ways so that these powers begin to flow through them naturally, right? As opposed to through the tech, right? So it doesn't have to be a warped, like all of a sudden I have a lizard face or something like that.
Isn't that what you want for a character you're playing for the next, you know, 20 sessions?
And it can, if that's where you want to go with it, but it's not an immediate, it has to be a physical warping, you know what I mean? I think it's much, much more fun, this idea of like, it's changing the way in which their biology is, and it allows this, because that's what's going to allow sorcerers and warlocks and druids to have this effortless power. It's not necessarily going to be from tech, it's going to be because they've been changed, and however that is, whether that's biologic or cybernetic, who knows, right? Or psionics, stuff like that, you know.
That's right.
it sort of kills my next idea, because I was looking at equipment here, and I was thinking one way you could really make it interesting, though it might be somewhat hard with all the different types of ingredients, is that you don't have the idea of an arcane focus. You have the idea of the component pouch. You are a engineer. You need to have these things in your pouch. When you go to town, you have to make sure you have these things in order to cast the spells that require those kind of components there. You'd have to shrink the list. Obviously, you're not getting sprigs of this and everything like that. There would have to be, it would have to be highlighting, I'm getting the tools for this, you know, oil or some other of these things, wires, all these other things, right, that are part of my component pouch. But it, that would be what drives my spells, the tech that I'm collecting in my pouch that I use to power the spells, versus just the stone itself is a symbol of it, but the actual execution of the spells is often just using the stuff that's in your pouch to cast things. Go ahead, Tony.
I think I have like post-traumatic stress disorder from being a first edition wizard looking for bat guano. Okay. I like, so what I was kind of kicking around was, what if the engineer's focus was their gun? And then they could do, and they'd be casting shots from that. I don't know. That's an idea. But if you're looking for like actual physical components, but like say you just needed X amount of gold pieces worth of components versus very specific odd ones per spell, I can find that.
If you take the gun, then it's just a series of different cylinders that you slip in that are the different spells, and you could use the same mechanics so that you could slip in a you know, whatever, a firebolt or whatever like that. And it's just like a runes on your revolver that then makes it like, you know, execute spells or something like that. And that becomes your spell book, is a series of these cylinders that you're collecting that drive the gun.
Yeah, I think there's a really great in between with this. Because, yeah, Tony, I understand what you're saying with the components and stuff. Like there's a fun part of it where that does create a lot of narrative world play and stuff like that. But I think there's something in between here, because it goes back to what we were talking about with the idea of a standard of living, right? That you, in essence, in this world, have a certain amount of gold that you need to have each week, each month that you are adventuring, that is required to get stuff. So if you're a fighter, if you're a rogue, right, if you're John Maverick East, and I need demolition supplies, I need to keep buying those, because when I blow them up, they're blown up. When I run out of my 24 shells that I get in my Frontiers pack, I need to buy ammo constantly or find it, right? So in the same way with the engineer, what we could do is you have this, like the arcane folk, the Blackstone, right? You have this piece of tech. I'm going to go off. So you guys know I love Brandon Sanderson, right? The Stormlight Archives. Another book he had was the Mistborn Trilogy. Now in this world, the people ingested metals and they burned them inside to create different powers. It sounds really weird at first. It's actually really cool when he builds it in the world. So what if the black stone somehow transmutes materials that I purchase into the ability to power spells? It doesn't have to be, I need a mistletoe of holly and I need a bat guano and I need a carved artifact worth 2,500 gold pieces, right? But it could be materials that, by and large, anything that is a component-based spell, which all of them are, is just a matter of I need to have an amount of components. And it's just like an amorphous 10 gold pieces worth of things that supplies me for a time. And then, obviously, if I need something like a diamond worth 500, well, then I need to get something that's worth that, just like in the normal spell, because it's a much more powerful spell. But in essence, it just transmutes materials that you can find and purchase in the world, but it doesn't have to be so specific. But it does give a cost to the spells.
So in 4th edition, you could break down magical items you didn't like into something called residuum, and then make new ones out of them. Like it was like the magical stuff and just reformed it.
Yeah, residuum. Stuff. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
But yeah, that's a fair point. Like, okay, so you're a gunslinger. You need to go buy more ammo. Well, you're a spellcaster. You need to go buy components. Okay.
Yes.
I like where that's going.
And it's just called components, and it's just, you know, wires and little L joints and stuff like that.
And if you can find it, and also something fun that we're going to get into when we get to the spellcasting idea, because I have some thoughts, but the idea that you're learning how these things work, but you really don't know how they work. So new things that you find or purchase and transmute maybe create a weird spell that you didn't know. And now you're like, I need to find more of that, you know, whatever it might be. And that might be a way that you're learning spells as well in the game. But regardless. So with that, I mean, the equipment list, we've done it every time. I think we should go through the Frontier Pack one more time, Tony.
You want to hear the contents of the Frontier Pack?
I would love to hear the Frontier Pack, because they all receive it, and Solomon Walker hasn't heard about what he gets in the Frontier Pack.
Right. Well, he gets a backpack, / a saddlebag, bedroll, mess kit, tinder box, canteen, lantern, lamp oil, 10 days of hardtack, 50 feet of rope, and an ammo pouch.
Yeah, and as we talked about with the other people, I'm thinking, like, most people have a level of proficiency in firearms in this world. So does he get, like, a little pistol or a Derringer to start out with as one of his weapons of choice?
I think that's it's a simple weapon, right? Like, we kind of have to.
Yeah, like, we're keeping that generally at, like, a D8 or D6, D8 kind of thing. It's a ranged weapon, but it's not a revolver.
They can wield like crossbows, so that would be like a pistol, you know.
So he's got his pistol. He's got he can load it up a couple times before he has to purchase more ammo. But he's going to be focused a lot more on finding these components. And then, like we said, instead of a spell book, they in essence have this piece of technology that, depending on the flavor, like Chris, you're like, you could take the thing and it attaches to the gun. He's built the gun out in a way that it attaches to the gun to fire something from the gun. But other times he transmutes it to comprehend languages, whatever it might be, right? He does what needs to be done to what he's learned of this weird piece of ancient tech.
Yeah, no, I think it's like you'd want to make it so that it's solid enough that people could just pick it up and not like with the deity thing have a whole lot of choice there. But I love the idea of the gun and somehow incorporating that you're not necessarily like, if my pistol isn't necessarily, I'm not necessarily going to load it with ammo. I'm going to load it with the spells that I find, the runes that I find that I carve onto these cylinders or whatever, you know, or the ones that I construct when I find new schematics, right? Like, which would be like finding a spell scroll or something like that. And so there you create a very simple sort of focus there where that's, you know, it's simple. It kind of fits with the world, and it's kind of cool that it works with the gun, and it kind of keeps you away from just like a wizard just going around plugging people with his pistol, right? Like, you like it as like, I'm running out of spells, I need to use something else here, but you like them to have their focus be on, you know, using cantrips and stuff, and that would be a really cool visual. You know, you're loading Mage Hand or Firebolt into your gun, right? Like the same way that the other guys are doing reloads and stuff of their pistols, so.
So right in first level, we have to start talking about spell casting and arcane recovery are the class thing. So the spell casting, I think, is taken care of with this idea of the piece of tech that the person has found, the engineer class has found. Mm-hmm. And then obviously, like, the spell slots that you have, the mana that you have, is just the tech can power certain things a certain amount of times per day, right? And it needs a recharge period. I think something like an arcane recovery is not out of hand, that there are certain ways that you can help recharge.
Like a battery for your cell phone, that you have like a separate battery that you clip on the back and it gives you a little bit of extra juice for that day.
I kind of want to maybe pitch a loose idea here, since we're saying the mage now needs to use components continuously to spell cast. What if we gave them more flexibility with prepared spells?
So that goes right what I was going to say, Tony. So
I got you.
No, it's great. With the cleric class, so you guys, again, guys, please, this is a crowdsourced thing. We're talking a lot about this, but we want your feedback because we're taking all of it and kind of creating this amalgam of this new campaign setting. So please reach out to us. Join the conversation. You can reach us at 3wisedms.com. You can reach us at 3wisedms@gmail.com. And a lot of the conversations, a lot of the polls and voting are happening on Facebook and Instagram. So please check us out on those 3wisedms on both those handles. But last episode, we started talking about how does a cleric change in terms of prepared spells and knowing spells and all this. And we threw out a couple ideas, keeping it just the same as the normal cleric, where they know all these, but they prepare a certain amount. We threw out the idea of the wizard, like a wizard where they prepare an amount of spells that morning, and they only know so many spells. And then we also threw out the idea that we played with in Dragonlance, in our Dragonlance campaign, where the cleric can, in essence, cast anything that is level appropriate, but it is very much dependent on the domain, on the situation. It's much more of a back and forth. And Tony did bring up a good point that can turn into a bit of a Mother May I situation, but that's something to work out at the table with the player. But it does make the cleric feel a little more prophetic, a little more very unique in the world. So, Tony, to your point here, and that's kind of what you guys went for, was the more Dragonlance idea. So I'll share that article again so you guys can kind of get up to speed. But, Tony, this goes to the wizard, too. Like, you're not necessarily learning, but you're learning this piece of tech. And, like, we had talked about, like, the idea of things going weird with it sometimes, almost a wild magic kind of thing. But we should, because if you're going to have where the magic can be dangerous, it should also be very rewarding in the same fashion. So, yeah, I think right along your lines here, the idea of what can the wizard, the engineer, accomplish with this?
Well, I think if you're talking about the idea that they're carrying around something, there becomes a weight limit sort of idea. It doesn't have to be a hard to find limit, but you know, you can only carry so many of these on you at a time. I think if we take the idea that I can change preparation in between combat and stuff like that. When I'm in combat, I can't get into my pack and grab these other six spell cylinders that I can. But obviously, after combat, I could switch those out. Like, I'm having to be tied into these five for the day versus I do these ones. And then after the combat, I can go through my pack. I can change out the spells that I want to prepare. Or, I mean, we could let them have all of them, too. But I think that might be a cool way to meter it, is that I'm carrying all these. It's in my pack, but I only have so many in my side pouch that are the ones that I'm using right this second. But I can always reload from the backpack.
So, like, the wizard has these cylinders. So, for example, I know magic missile. I know flame bolt. I know, and three other spells here. So what if I had, like, three magic missiles of these cylinders, and they were available on my bandolier. I could then use this, but you need your spell slot to empower them. It's not a matter of just having the engraved cylinder. You need to have that plus the magical energy to make it
ship sail. Yeah, the spell slot is almost like the energy pack that fires the
it's
cylinder
the energy
that has
of
the spell in it. So
yeah,
I have a single magic missile, but I have three energy things, you know, three spell slots with which to power the cylinders that I have on there. So I could put magic missile in there three times, or I could, switch out with any of the ones that I have on my bandolier or in my side pack there.
Chris, you know what I really like with that idea is instead of something like arcane recovery, because I actually like the idea of like the piece of tech that is powering all of their stuff up to this point requires some sort of transmutation of these shells or whatever it is. Like, I love this idea, right? Like, they're carrying a bandolier of components that they just like shove in and cast this. And that's like the piece of tech, the black stone that Solomon has, can power so much a day. But instead of something like arcane recovery, I do like this idea that I can switch out like and create some new stuff. Like, if you give me an hour, I can create a whole nother list of spells, and I'm not just locked into, well, I prepared magic missile today and we really need knock or something. And I can't, well, you're going to have to wait till tomorrow, guy, right? I like that idea. Where
I have nightmares about that.
But you have that ability to, like, you can, preparing is not this idea that it's stuck in my brain and once I use it, it's gone and all this kind of nonsense, right? but more just like, I have components, but I need time to shift them out, so I can't just, in the middle of combat, pull out, you know, titanium ball bearings or something, you know, whatever, right?
Yeah, two things with that. One, the original notion in the earlier text was the knowledge is removed from your memory. I never really bought into that. And number two, I would always remember like the combat spells first, because I'm not gonna have like an offensive spell. I know I'm gonna get attacked. I mean, I might need knock, right? It's a useful spell, but I'm walking around with that and then getting my face kicked in.
So instead of arcane recovery, then I say with any kind of short rest, and obviously long rest too, but any short rest, or even possibly long, shorter amount of time, that you have like what we call like tech preparation or tech recovery, where you can swap out. So wizards, their power is how much knowledge they can learn. They can learn a billion spells if they want, but you're limited because I can only prepare this many a day. But if you have time, I can switch them out. I think that's really, I would take that over an arcane recovery. Like a tech prep kind of thing.
It would make spells like knock and some of those other ones more viable, because
right,
you might be able to switch out versus being like, I'm just gonna have to firebolt the door
down. No, I like that. So you can, so with a short rest, you can instead of recovering a spell slot, you can change your spell list. You can change out the whole list if you want, but you need time to do it.
Or make it like an either or. So there's going to be times that arcane recovery is really important, because spell slots are at a minimum, especially early on. So you can choose to either power up your, you know, power up.
So you have one of, you have like one of these a day,
you know, yeah.
You have one of these a day. You can either choose to, like, kind of channel divinity. You can do this or you can do this. So you could arcane recovery and like recharge the system in a way, or swap out your spell list with a short rest. And you can do that once a day, one of the two. Yeah.
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 I mean, mechanically, I don't need an hour to change out my cylinders.
I would say, like, I would.
That's
say,
what I'm
I would
saying, say but it just we, can't be in the we, midst of a turn-based initiative. That's say, the only
like,
thing, right?
If we leave arcane recovery, that you can recover things, and it's just the preparing of spells as part of the class. Outside of combat, you can switch out cylinders for your preparation, just not within the once combat has started, you can no longer switch out your cylinders.
Are we saying that in an unlimited fashion?
I mean, I don't see a whole lot of... I mean, the amount of times that I might actually change my spells during the day, it makes
the engineer powerful. Definitely. It gives them something that is very unique, which I'm not against. I just want to make sure we are all on board with that.
Or on a short rest, you can do it. I mean, you could have as many short rests as you want, right? Obviously, you only get the one arcane recovery, but you could take three short rests in a day. It would be like a really slow day, but
maybe how about with the tech prep, right? So you got arcane recovery like normal. But you also have tech prep, and that you can do it as many times as you would like, but changing out the things does cost you components. So it does cost you an amount, like, and it's not me tracking how much back guano I have, but it's me tracking how many gold pieces worth of components, and it costs me like one gold piece to swap out my thing. So it does have a cost for it. So you can do it, but there is a limit at some point. For it.
Right. Yeah.
Something like that.
No, I love that.
All right. So instead of a short rest with component cost, we'll call it. And I like that, because I really think that one of the things we can push in this world, like we've talked about, is making the economy work even more, and not just so I can go buy cool stuff, but so I can go buy the stuff that I need to keep doing the thing to get the cool stuff, right? Like there's a necessary, like, I got to pay rent. I got to pay, like, things in my daily expenditures. Now I also need to buy ammo. I need to buy components. I need to buy whatever, you know. I like that idea. I need to build a church if I'm a prophet. Whatever, you know.
Yeah. I need
it to makes build the a money key. Matter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So, I mean, that takes them from first level. Second level is... now your arcane tradition. So real quick, let's so initiative is plus three. The armor class would be listed. So we were talking about it's 10 plus intelligence plus dex for him, right?
Correct.
So that is a 16. His starting hit points would have been a 8. So yes. He now goes up. We're going to use the average. So we're going to go up another 6. 14. Now let's. We don't need to necessarily pick out spells. I mean, we all know how wizard spells, kind of work. That's an easy enough thing. When we go into arcane tradition, I'll tell you what I think, and then I'm going to give it out to you guys. I think that they really watered down the traditions and the schools in 5e, as opposed to like earlier editions or something like Pathfinder, where it actually mattered much more what school I was, because I didn't just have equal access to everything, but I have extra access to this. It was like, I get a lot of good access to this one, but it does cost me in this other one. Thoughts in terms of the engineer.
So, yeah, well, the previous editions, yeah, that was really dicey. You could be a wizard, have less slots, but full access versus you're, say, a invoker and then have no access to, like, defensive spells.
Right.
I mean, we could go that way. I don't know. Like, if we're leaning into this engineer guy to this thing here, I was going to propose I didn't really have a different featured name for this, but I kind of had a power in mind if you
okay, maintain okay.
This. I was thinking, like, since this is a gun world, what if they could have their cantrips used through their gun and then do ricochets, where they could then, if they had a solid object, they could, like, say, fire a firebolt and have it hit like a pile of rocks or another solid object and ignore cover, partial cover, full cover, because that's very shootout kind of environmental.
I don't mind that idea. What do you think about? So this goes back to so I don't know if even schools necessarily matter with this type of idea, because it's more like you're learning a level of power and casting, you know, spell smithing, but you kind of know. What if, because I talked earlier episodes about the idea that magic is dangerous, the tech is dangerous, you don't necessarily know how it goes, so depending on you starting to meddle with it, it could go poorly for you, right, wild magic style. What if you're an engineer, you're specifically focused on this? As you go up in level, you gain more ability to control the known quantities of the Blackstone, for instance. So you have less times that you need to, like, roll to see if you get a 1 or a 20 or whatever, that type of thing. Like, less chance of wild magic happening.
We could tie that into, like, you know, where we said there could be misfires with your gun on a 1. You could do that perhaps with spells that require hits.
I mean, that could get a little bit wild with some of the, like, if you roll a 1 on a fireball or something like that, but it would definitely be a thing. I think in many ways, I think to your point, schools are kind of weird. In many cases, these people are going to be loners, right? They're not coming from some enclave where they're learning from some tech master. They're sort of finding this stuff and learning it themselves. So I don't know. I think for me, the School of Evocation is really as a jumping off point just for those kind of things in a world that is as rough and tumble. I think the ability to be able to create the pockets of relative safety and stuff like that is really powerful for wizards, especially if you're going to be doing a lot of this and it's combat focused, you know. So, I mean, I really love those and the idea of that school as far as a classic frontier wizard sort of idea.
So, I mean, the wizard kind of his tradition is to be the engineer, in a matter of speaking. Like, right, you're getting to get this ability to then switch out your spells. You could maybe arc spells around solid objects when you don't necessarily have clean line of sight.
I think those are fun things. So instead of, like, schools and stuff, like, you, in essence, like, are learning certain ways. So if you're, like, a gunfighting kind of engineer, then you're learning how to utilize it in that way. But in the same way, because again, in this world, everyone has access to this level of magic too through the tech, right? That's the whole thing. Like, so even the gunslinger can be learning tech. The difference being is this is alien technology that is highly advanced to what you know. You do not know how it works. It goes poorly a lot, a lot. So the engineer, the power of the class is also that I can spend time to lessen those effects and better corral that energy. Where everyone else, they can grab tech and use it, but they might blow up the tavern or whatever it might be, you know? Like, I really, making magic cost makes the ability for being an engineer really powerful because you control it. So you are wildly dangerous in that way. You know what I mean?
So people could attempt to use the technology without the spellcasting feature, and I think that's where things can go
absolutely
positive.
And go then positive. It goes awesome or fucking terrible.
So, you know? But like
in the same way that guns will blow you away, magic will really incinerate the town.
So maybe if the base class is the Wanderer, and then the arcane tradition is the Engineer.
Oh. I kind of like that idea too, right? Yeah, like the idea that as you level, it's almost like the name, the level names, right? Well, like back maybe, in the day,
maybe,
you know?
Well, maybe the ability to switch out becomes part of the engineer school. Then the ability to switch out your spell slots, the ability to make or to switch out your prepared spells, the ability to, like you're saying, to reduce the possibility of misfires.
Yeah.
Those can fill out the like at second level, you get the ability to be able to use any of your prepared spells on a short rest. You can switch out, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. I like the idea like that. You start out very open and the magic is still very dangerous. You have access to it at level one where no one else really does. Right. Like a gunslinger doesn't just start with a piece of tech. Right. But the wizard class, the engineer does. But then you decide as you level up, your subclass, your arcane tradition is how am I really just going wild card with this and I can do some real damage, but it's more dangerous. Do I refine it so I really learn how to build this stuff? Do I become an engineer and I literally become more artificer and I can literally build out tech much easier? Yeah, I like those ideas.
Solid.
Awesome. Awesome. So that takes care of their, so like not tradition, but more like the path, right? Like the path of technology, you know,
tech path.
Yeah. Like, where do you go? You know, you don't start as engineer. You start as a wanderer, let's say, or whatever it might be, whatever we call it. And then you choose what path you're really taking. I like that very much. Because then it's the similar, like anybody who picks up tech is kind of using it in the way a first level wizard was, which is you can cast it, but you're rolling on this table. You know, don't roll a one. If you roll a 20, you get some sweet, sweet stuff happening, right?
You need
right?
to roll a one to blow your fingers off of that table.
That's what I'm saying. Like, make it matter, right? Make it matter. So, you know, I don't think magic matters as much in a lot of games. So I think this really does it. So then if we raise him up again, he's now at 20 hit points at third level. And Solomon the Blackstone Walker, he is a engineer third level. Because for me, I want to stay with his engineer path because we came up with that cool name, and that name is pretty goddamn awesome.
He would have had to become an engineer because it's what we decided. Yeah.
Yeah, because we literally named the class after him. So yeah, I'm thinking, guys out there, before we jump to final thoughts, the poll I think that's going to be coming out this week will be, what do you call the wizard class for their first level before you start taking your path? And then what else do you have? You can go engineer, you can go wild card, you can go we'll throw a couple ideas out to you. Let us know what you guys think. But it's about that time now for some final thoughts on the last of our starting party, Solomon the Blackstone Walker.
I like where we went with this. This character seems gritty, fits into the time frame, has features that lead into the environment. Not only are they part of the environment, they add to it, which is nice. I think it's good that we're not going to have to try to rewrite the entire player's handbook full of wizard spells. That's a relief. And they're not going to be overly powerful, but not a sitting duck, and have the opportunity to do some really cool stuff down the road. I like it.
Yeah, hell yeah. No, I think it's a good example of you can take what's there and you can kind of tweak on it, and you can talk about it, and you can find out where somebody makes a really bad idea, but there's good ideas in it, and you talk about it and come up with a good idea, like we did with Arcane Recovery with the idea of switching out prepared spells. And then also, I just think the wizard, especially in this environment, they always were a bit of an outcast. But in this one, I think it really plays as being someone who is truly an outcast. You're a solo person stumbling into town. You may not have a whole lot of connections. So I think out of all of them, this one has the most the depth for story in this world that we've created so far. So I think that's really cool.
I love that every single pre-gen that we have in Boomtown for your starting adventure in the starter set that we're going to release. It'll be fully packaged, probably available at Barnes & Noble and Target. Now, but every single one has an awesome name. All right, that's just how it is. Roland is the Gunslinger, John Maverick East, Sister Mercy Kane, and Solomon Walker. Like, there's a killer. But same thing as we did with the Prophet. We took things that while we understand the nature of 5e to balance out so you don't feel like you're losing out if you decide to play a sorcerer instead of a wizard, in this setting, it really does matter because you do gain benefits, specific benefits that the other classes don't. You know, you play by completely different rules. I love that. I love that we really leaned into magic being unknown, dangerous, powerful, and special. And that this class, whatever it might be, the engineer, the wild card, the artificer, the wanderer, all of these possibilities that you could go, really, really leans into our inciting idea, which was the idea that tech is magic, which obviously has warped and changed a little bit over the time. So that's going to be it for me. Guys, again, please, as I said mid-show there, join the conversation. We've gotten a lot of ideas about what we're naming things, how things work in this world from all of you. So reach out to us at 3wisedms.com. You can get us at 3wisedms@gmail.com. And then obviously Facebook and Instagram. We are very active on those sites. Again, we have been doing this real-time world building for Boomtown, but our main mission still remains the same. We are DMs with problems. We love to help DMs with problems. And as you've noticed with this series of episodes, it's gotten us talking about some of the more philosophical things about running worlds, building worlds, DMing them, and the decisions that have to be kind of made to adjudicate some of that stuff. So if you do have any questions or issues or problems at your table or what you're running, reach out to us on those same handles, please. We love to take listener questions and talk about them, especially if we can maybe fit them into Boomtown. So I don't know what you were rolling out with your D6s, Chris. I don't know if they came from Fan Roll Dice, but you know, I'm sure that they probably roll just as well. So visit our affiliate link at fanrolldice.com/REF/2871. Put in the code 3WISEDMS10. That's the number 3WISEDMS, the number 10. You get 10% off your order. They got some really fun stuff coming out currently. So that will be it for us this episode. And as we do each episode, we are going to let our dear old erstwhile leader take us out.
And thank you to all of you listening from home. We really appreciate it. If you like what you've been listening to, please smash that 5-star rating button. Let us know. Leave a good review. Tell your friends. That really helps us grow. If you'd like to hear us answer any question you have, send it to us at 3wisedms@gmail.com or go to our website, 3wisedms.com, and enter it in the What's Your Problem field. Or you can talk to us on Facebook, Instagram. We're active on all those platforms, so feel free to drop by, you know, send us a question, and we'll see if we can make it on the show. That's it for this week. We'll see you next time, 3 Wise Names.